So this is the last workshop, which usually means everyone is exhausted and you thought about skipping it. And your brain feels like, listen, you know who you are. And your brain is like so overloaded. You ever have seen a sponge where you put water on it, but it doesn't soak in and it just lays there in a sad little puddle? We're at that stage, right? That's where we are. So I'm going to try to make this fun and engaging. But if you forget everything, that's okay. Because if you put your email down on this very official Seto pad, I will put your first name in your email and make sure you write it really clearly because I am impatient. So if I can't read it, I'll probably just move on with my life. I will send you slides and I'll send you a sample presentation and I'll send you the church rating details. So even if your sponge brain cannot handle that right now, just write your email down, check out, and you can catch it all later. Just kidding. Don't put that in my review. She said we didn't have to pay attention. So confused.
She said
you're
like sponge.
Yeah, she called me a sponge. So my name is Sarah. I'm an executive director of a pregnancy center in Pennsylvania. We have four offices north of Pittsburgh, south of Erie. So if you're ever in that area, we're characterized by cows and corn and steel mills. We have two medical offices, we have two resource offices, and then we also have an abstinence education program, a grief support program that covers abstinence and covers miscarriage support, and we're working on getting into adverse prenatal diagnoses, so walking with women through that process. We technically do it now, but it's literally just me. Like, they're like, oh, call Sarah. So I'm not sure that really counts as a ministry if it's just me. But and we also have an international ministry that just came up in the last couple of years. And I will talk a little bit more about that at the very end if we have time. But I don't really want to get into that too much. I have four boys. They are 6, 8, 10, and 12. They're at grandma's right now. And my husband came with me to this conference. And this is like the closest thing we've had to a vacation in a unfortunately long time. So we're having a good time. I wrote a book. I'll talk about that at the end. I have some brochures and things you can check out at my table afterwards. But my real passion is pro-life. It is pregnancy help. I've wanted to do this since I was 12 years old. I know that's super weird, but I read a book by Jerry. This is not an endorsement of Jerry Falwell. I know he's super polarizing. I don't even know that much about him, but I read a book that he wrote called If I Should Die Before I Wake at 12 years old. And my mom would like me to tell you she did not know I was reading it. She's like, people are going to think I'm a bad mother. I'm like, yes, that's what everyone takes away from that story. I was trying to win a reading contest at church. Yes, you're a terrible mother. People are retroactively calling CYS right now. And so I read it, and it just broke my heart. Because the book described an abortion. And I knew that we were pro-life, and I knew that life was precious, and I knew those things in my head, but until that moment, I didn't understand. And in my 12-year-old brain, I thought, by the time I'm old enough to make a difference, everyone will know, and there won't be anything left for me to do. Because I thought, surely, if everyone knew how awful abortion was, everyone would be against it. And my big fear, and this is the absolute truth, my big fear was that by the time I was old enough to do something, it would be too late and abortion would already be gone. And honestly, and some of that naivety is still with me today, because I think, man, if they really knew, how could they do this? How could they encourage this? How could they support this? And sometimes I still struggle with that. And I think we all do, because we see what abortion does to women and we see what it does to families and we think, why? You know, why are they doing this? So that's where my passion comes from. That's where my heart is. And that's why I'm excited to share with you today about how to build those relationships with churches to get more people engaged and excited and passionate about what you're doing and the amazing work that you're doing in your communities. So before we get started, and we're reasonably small, but what's everyone's role? How many of us are executive directors in here? Okay, so, and I'm guessing you're probably also like the development person, right? All right. How many of you are development directors without being, okay. And then who else do we have in here right now? I know you're with the post board. Administrative assistant. Oh, I want one of those.
Abortion recovery.
Okay. And Heidi, what are you?
I just volunteered, but my husband is the president of the board.
Okay, just volunteered. Okay, so I won't say anything too embarrassing for you. I'll do what I can.
Not really.
Just like pretending. That's how the best board members start. Like they come to a banquet, and next thing you know, they're signing something, and next thing you know, they're coming to meetings.
Next thing you know, you're the chairman.
I know.
It's a downward spiral. All right, so as a percentage, how much of your support comes directly from churches? How many know that? All right, so you should know.
I think we only have like six churches that support us full time.
Okay.
And then I think it's mainly individuals that
okay.
support us.
And you said 60%?
60 to 70%.
Okay.
So it's better like monthly, quarterly, mm-hmm. or especially with our budget.
That's a lot. How much is your budget?
Right at 100,000.
Okay, so as your budget grows, that percentage will probably shrink because you tend to like hit that top line in your church budget, and that's okay. That's okay for that percentage to shrink, but those people are going to stay with you. Like they're going to stay solid because they really love what you're doing. Does anybody else know what percentage they are?
About
40. 40? Okay, if you don't know, you want to find out. And you should, and not that it necessarily has to be at the top of your head, like you're at Walmart, someone runs into you and is like, hey, what's your percentage of church support? But you should have a general idea of what percentage you're getting from churches, what percentage you're getting from fundraisers. I count baby bottles as churches, not as fundraisers. I know that that different people do that different ways. And you can count it however you want, but and then know like what percent are you getting from grants, what are you getting from individuals, and then that lets you know, okay, these are the percentages I'm getting from each income stream, and then these are the income streams that I believe can grow. So if you have an extremely high percentage from churches, it may not grow, but maybe there's tons of room to grow in your individual. Or if you're not getting a very high percentage from grants, you can grow that and maybe not worry about another one. You really can't, I'm saying this to myself, you can't focus on all income streams at the same time. But if you take one or two a year, you can focus on growing that area and letting the others kind of stay as they are, and that allows you to build your overall budget pretty efficiently. That was free. I mean, actually, literally all of this is free. You're not paying me, but I guess you paid AFL, so.
But when you say churches, mm-hmm. you are talking about from the
actual church
budget.
Yep. Yeah, they're either doing baby bottles, they're paying you out of their budget, not just from people
in the church.
Yeah, that's how I would count it. All right, so today we're going to talk about why the church. We're going to talk about knowing our churches, meeting our churches, and developing relationships with our churches. So that's for everybody that wants a structure. That's gone now. Hope you wrote it down. Okay. I can email those, so don't try to write everything down. All right, so Proverbs 24:11-12 tells us to rescue those who are being taken away to death, hold back those who are stumbling to the slaughter. If you say, behold, we did not know this, does not he who weighs the heart perceive it? Does not he who keeps watch over your soul know it? And will he not repay man according to his work? So that's a pretty harsh verse, right? In fact, I know that God called me to share that with our local churches one year, and I actually felt bad about it. I felt almost guilty, like, bringing that kind of heavy content to a church, because I thought, man, are these people going to get angry with me? And then I thought, well, I mean, I guess I have to get angry at God, because it's not like I'm making it up. I even looked it up in the message to see if it was nicer. It's totally not. Sorry, I didn't realize you were, like, looking through my head. So I don't think we as pregnancy centers can fully embrace working with our churches if we don't understand how important we are to the churches. So we talk a lot about how the church is important to us. They provide us with funding, they provide us with volunteers, they provide us with prayer, they provide us with encouragement and support and all of those kinds of things. But I think we forget that we are also fulfilling one of their responsibilities. Like Jarrell said, you know, we're the special forces of the church. That's now my favorite quote of all time. And so without us, the church isn't really able to fulfill their Proverbs 24:11-12 calling. Now, yes, obviously there are churches that do a great job of helping and ministering without pregnancy centers. But we've come out of the church culture because of me. Because as one pastor told me, he's like, well, if a woman came in here, I'd tell her not to have an abortion. I'm like, oh, let me call Heartbeat. Close her down.
We don't need pregnancy centers.
We arose out of a need. There was a need to address the abortion issue in our nation, and pregnancy centers were founded to meet that need. And so now that's us. We're part of the big church, the big C church, the body of Christ. One of the responsibilities of God's people is to save these children and their mothers and their fathers and their families and their communities from being led to the slaughter, from stumbling to the slaughter. And we're the ones doing this. They're doing it in other ways too, but they're mostly doing it through the pregnancy help movement. And that's, if there's nothing else you take away from today, I want you to understand that while we can't function without our church partnerships, we are also fulfilling an essential calling of the church. It's a two-way street. They need us as much as we need them. Now, maybe that's not the best way to open your church conversation, but, you know, you do you. I'm not going to tell you how to handle that. But it is important for us to understand, because I think sometimes we go to a church and we feel like we're taking, or we're asking, or we're imposing, or we're putting them out, or, you know, something like that. But no, we're really allowing them to step into this amazing calling that God has given us. And we're allowing them to partner with us. And we're working together with them to save these children, to save these mothers. And so it's not about them helping us, or us asking them, or them giving to us. It's really about partnering and coming together.
I think one of the boys drew that.
Yeah. Oh, no. Is there a picture in there? It's not a butt, is it?
Not yet.
Oh, no. My 12-year-old has a very immature sense of humor. Just kidding. It's awful. All right, so building effective church partnerships can be game-changing for you and your ministry, but it's also game-changing for the churches. All right? I believe that the church is the answer to the problem of abortion. The church is in God's people. Not the church building, not the church denomination, but God's people. And so when pregnancy help works effectively with the local church, that's how we make that happen. So how do we engage them, right? That's our problem. That's our job. And the first thing we need to do is we need to know our local churches. Regardless of where you're located, how many churches are around you, or what your particular theological bent is, you have to know your area. What denominations are most prevalent? What are their beliefs regarding the sanctity of human life? How do their church services run? How big are they? How do they feel about women presenting? Most of us are 100% female, right? The only men I have on my board right now are pastors. They're weirdly busy on Sunday morning. So if I have a church that's not going to accept a female presenter, I'm kind of up a creek, aren't I? How should you dress when you attend their services? I went into one church because I didn't do the research, and I thought my legs were going to catch on fire. Because I was wearing pants. And I was the only female wearing pants, including a baby. And it was snowing. And I was like, oh dear, what have I done? They support us, they're great, they understand I'm not part of their denomination, but it would have been better if I had done my research and dressed in a way that fit in with their culture. But by golly, it was snowing.
They're probably saying they
may
say four pants.
Yeah, really. I probably started a revolution. The pastor's never going to call me back. If you don't know what kind of churches are around you, or you view every church through your own denominational lens, you're not going to be able to reach them effectively. So first of all, you have to know, what is the most common denomination around you? Does anybody know what that is?
Baptist,
because we're in Missouri, right? Yeah.
Catholic.
Catholic? And there's a big difference between Catholic and Baptist.
We live in Independence, Missouri. So we have the Mormons, and we also have the reorganized church up there.
What's the reorganized church?
Well, it's a branch off of Mormons.
Oh, okay.
And that's where Christ is coming back. So just so you know, if you want to come to Independence. But that's our area.
There you go.
I think you're the first person that said Mormon when I asked that question.
Yeah, they've got a Latter-day Saints temple or whatever there in the area. Mm-hmm.
Anything other than Baptist or Catholic or Mormon?
Amish.
Amish.
Mm-hmm. We have a lot of Methodists too.
Methodists.
We have all of it. It's like
Yeah. Not one more than the other, really.
Yeah. And that makes it harder sometimes because you have to know all of them. In my area, it's Presbyterian. Anybody want to guess how many Presbyterian denominations are in my community?
About
three. Nope.
Eight. Oh, give her the prize.
Yeah. It's a pretend prize. Here, catch it. No.
I missed it.
Sorry, it's gone now. There are Presbyterians everywhere, and there are eight Presbyterian denominations in my community. They're not all the same. Of the eight, there's nine. A ninth Presbyterian denomination just showed up this year. Yes, nine. So two of them are wildly pro-choice. Mm-hmm. One of them is, like, I won't even go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of them, a little bit, you know. One of them can go either way. Five of them are pro-life. No. Six of them, seven. Anyway, there's a lot of math there. But most of them are pro-life. This is recorded. That's terrible. I can raise money. I can't count it, just so you know. Of the pro-life ones, one of them is so conservative that most of them won't support us because we're not part of their denomination. But the rest of them are solidly pro-life and open to supporting us. So which of those should I focus on? Right, the ones that are open to supporting us and are pro-life. Now there's space for most of those other ones. Once I have the sort of, I don't want to say easy ones, but the ones that are most likely to connect with us, once I've met with them, connected with them, and I've got them on board, then I can talk to those other churches as well. But sometimes just making a list of what's in your area and saying, okay, these are the churches that are, they're pro-life, they're open to supporting us, they're open to having us come in. Start there. Don't go after the hardest churches. Start with the ones that are most likely to say yes, and then build out from there. And there's plenty of time to talk to those other churches. I've been thrown out of churches. It's a good time.
Nice.
But which especially now I can say to people, I've been thrown out of churches nicer than this, you know, as I make sure they really don't like you already before you say that. So in order to find out what denomination is prevalent and who's most likely to help you, you need to do your research. Look online. Read their confession of faith. Look for news articles about their denomination. Follow the denomination on Facebook. Follow the church on Facebook. Sign up for their email list. One year, I'm not Lutheran, but one year the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, so there's three kinds of Lutherans as far as I know. There's Evangelical Lutheran Church of America, very liberal. Most of them are not going to support you. Some might, most won't. Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is very conservative, and so is Wells. And we have three or four LCMS churches in our community. One year, they spent the whole year reaffirming their stance on abortion, that they were very pro-life, that their congregation should be pro-life, and that that's something they should teach. That was a great year to talk to all the LCMS churches. But if I hadn't been following them, I wouldn't have known. Because I don't have any staff that go there. Yes?
So is there a way where we can just, like, take a shortcut and have a list of who is for and who's against?
I mean...
Because I wear a lot of hats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you so do. I know you do. You send me a list, Connie. I'll do it for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'll do anything for Connie. I love her. Yeah, I'll give you at least a running start on who to consider. So that was a good year to reach out to all the LCMS churches. If a church is independent, and I know a lot of Baptists are independent, now most Baptists are going to be pro-life. I don't know that I've ever really run across a pro-choice Baptist denomination, and if you did have one, it's probably not in Missouri. You can still do some research online. You can read their website. You can see what's going on with it. You can sometimes even see what missions they support, and that would give you an idea if they support local missions as well as missions overseas, those kinds of things. Now, just because the denomination trends pro-life or pro-choice doesn't mean that the pastor is going to follow that. I've had Catholic priests that have no interest in talking to me. I've had Presbyterian ministers from Presbyterian Church USA, which is technically a pro-choice denomination, that support our church. or support our ministry through their church. So there is definitely some space to be willing to talk to anyone, but like I said, start with those churches that are most likely to say yes. So the next question is, does size matter?
No.
No.
We've had an itty bitty church in Republic, and they just, yeah, they bring us big, well, to me, big checks.
Yeah. You know? Honestly, yes, and that is often true. Now, we do have a very, very large Catholic church that does baby bottles for us every 3 years, and they raise like $3,000 each time. But most of the time, the smaller the church, the more you're going to get. Because they get to know you. Big churches are great, like don't avoid them, but often everyone's asking them to come in, everyone's asking them to speak, everyone's asking them if they can do a table, and they get kind of overwhelmed. And so sometimes they even just say no categorically because they've had so many ministries trying to get in. And you don't want to be perceived like you're just another ministry. So sometimes it is better to go with the smaller churches. The other thing is, smaller churches are less intimidating if you're not comfortable with public speaking. Now, realize that just because a church has what sounds like a small name, they may not be. And that sounds weird. However, think back to 2008 when Sarah was a college intern. And her executive director said, "Would you like to speak at New Life Baptist on Wednesday night? I'm busy." And I was like, "Wednesday night? What is that, like 12 people? Sure. There were 300 people there. And they were all looking at me. It was definitely baptism by fire. It was my first public speaking gig, and it was terrifying. But it worked out okay. The other benefit to smaller churches is they often don't need you to keep them as up to date. They're more likely to read your newsletters. They're more likely to read your thank you notes and pass them on to their congregation. They also remember you because the same people are going to go to the same church for a long period of time. So you might only have to go back every 3 or 4 years to give them an update. Where with a larger church, you might need to try to get in every year or every other year because they go through so many people and people tend to be more transient in larger churches. It's especially true if you have churches where generations of the same family have been attending. So if you've been there and you know you've talked to the parents and now the children are raising children, they are going to have passed down the fact that it's a good ministry, that they like what you do, and that they want to support you. And so that can be really, really powerful. My next tip is stay organized. You need to keep track. Everybody laughing. I know what you're laughing for. Keep track of which churches. Sorry, I already used up my free pass on Connie. You guys are on your own.
We're so needy, aren't we?
Keep track of which churches you've connected with, how involved they are, when you last spoke to them, and key donors that attend. The last thing you want to do is show up at a church and speak and not recognize your $5,000 a year donor. I've done that. It's really embarrassing. Because you're not expected to see them. You don't know they go there. And you meet how many people every year. And the last thing you want is somebody that supports your ministry at an extremely high level having to introduce themselves to you at their church. I know we use, how many of you use Waypool software for donors? Okay. I don't know if eKairos can do this or not, but we can actually attach donor pictures to their record.
Yeah.
It's super creepy. Oh, eKairos could do it too. It is, really. And then you can also attach a role that has the church's name. So before I go to a church, I run a report so I can pull any donor that we've identified as attending that church. So I kind of have a feeling of who I'm going to run into. And the Walk for Life is a good time to get those church affiliations because whenever they sign up to Walk, they pick the church that they're with. And so that lets you know where they go, even if you didn't know before.
I say, I have a lot of donors. I have no idea where they go. So every once in a while, their name pops up. I'm like, I know your name, but I didn't know they attended that church.
And that's fine, too. And when you show up to speak, just jot it down. And then you can go home and you can tag them with the right role. But if you use Fundeasy for your Walk for Life, when they sign up to be a walker, which I love Fundeasy for the walk. I don't get paid for that. I just really like it. They'll pick their church name and attach it to their donor record. So then you can go back through and you can look and see who's attached to which church, and then you'll kind of know who you're going to run into. And it sounds super stalkery when I say it like that, but it is. It works out really well. So you do your research, you know who's in your area, you know who's most likely to be receptive to you, And maybe you have a list of churches you want to connect with, right? What do you do next? This is going to feel very uncomfortable, so I want you guys to get ready. You have to meet them. So if you're kind of introverted, you like staying in the office, you like organizing, you like researching, you're like, I am good. But then eventually you have to leave your office and you have to talk to people, and sometimes it's not as comfortable, right? Like where clients come to see us, people come to see us, we're good. But walking into a church, maybe that you've never been to, can feel really uncomfortable. Getting out there and meeting people in person is so key. It really is. And I know it can feel really overwhelming, especially if you're the one seeing clients and you're the one running the books and you're the one cleaning the floors and you're the one washing the windows and you're the one that has to make sure the dagnab dead leaves don't build up on the front porch. You don't, sorry, is that personal? Is that just me? It's hard to take a day or even an hour and leave the office and go meet with people, but it's so important. It's so key. If you're in charge of development, even if you have all the other jobs as well, you have got to get out of the office. Because if you don't have money and you don't have community support, you won't have a ministry. If you do have money and you do have community support, you can hire someone else to sweep up the dead leaves. Or see clients, you know that too. And you can do it, and I can help you, give you some tools to make that possible. So on a scale of 1 to 3, how comfortable are you walking into a church? You don't know anyone, they don't know you, you've never been invited, you just show up during office hours and introduce yourself.
-10.
That's very honest.
Three.
You love it, it's great. Anyone feeling like they're like a 2, kind of like in the middle?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, it could be a little weird. I've wandered around a lot of churches.
I was going to suggest, I know we went to do that one time, and we were told by a church secretary that you go, normally get a first-time appearance with a pastor, so to go to the church secretary.
Oh, yeah.
Your first visit, first contact with them, and then follow up with the pastor.
Anybody who stopped by my table knows this. I will talk to anyone. I'll talk to the church secretary. I'll talk to the guy cleaning toilets. I'll talk to the pastor, the assistant pastor, the youth pastor. One time I talked to the guy cleaning toilets, and he was the pastor. It really, you just want to talk to someone, right? It can feel awkward, but it helps if you have a reason. And the good thing is, we have 2 months that give us a perfect reason for walking into a church uninvited. And one of those is Sanctity of Human Life Month, that's in January, and the other one is in October, that would be more the Catholic churches with Respect Life Month. And so if you're in a community where you have a pretty big Protestant-Catholic split, you can hit all your Protestant churches in January and your Catholic churches in October, because that's kind of when they're expecting to see someone anyway. So what we do at my office is we create bulletin inserts or posters. We put them in little bags. So we have these, and I was going to bring one and I forgot. You can buy them at Crest, I think it's Crestline.com, but you can get them in almost any promotional office. There are these bright plastic bags with our logo on them. And inside the bag go the bulletin inserts, a cover letter, my business card, a brochure, and I think I have like a church opportunities brochure that goes in there. So my personal goal for a long time, and I don't have to do it as much anymore because I've done so much of it in the past, was to personally visit every single church and drop off that bag of stuff. If they were there, I gave it to whoever was willing to talk to me. If they weren't there, I left it on the door with a note, because it shows that you didn't send a mass mailing. And you didn't send a packet in the mail. You didn't sit in your office and mail it out. It shows that you showed up and you dropped it off for them. And in fact, at one point, we kind of started taking churches off our list that we hadn't heard from. So instead of going around every year and dropping off the bag, we just stopped going. And they called us. They're like, where's our stuff? And I'm like, you've literally never called me before. I didn't even know you got it. But they were looking for it. And so it doesn't have to be complicated. And at the end, I'll have some links for some cheap and free design tools that you can use. You can buy bulletin inserts from Keener Marketing, I think, too. But it really shows the churches that you're giving them something of value. It gets your name in front of the congregation, and it can start that relationship. You can visit a lot of churches in one day, if that's what you're focused on. If I'm in an urban area, I can usually do 15 to 20. If I'm in a rural area, I usually try to do 8 to 12. And obviously, if I run into a pastor and we have an hour-long conversation, that, you know, that can derail that, but that's great. You know, that's the goal. That's what we're hoping for. We actually make cards that say, sorry, we missed you, and they have a picture of one of our babies on the front, and just inside it says, we wanted to drop this off for you. We hope you enjoy it. Call us if you have any questions. And of all the hundreds of churches that we've dropped that stuff off for, not one person has complained, other than the guy that threw me out, but that was different. Yeah, I show up. Sorry, this has nothing to do with the presentation. I walk into this church. It was Presbyterian, but I didn't know which kind. It just said Presbyterian, really tiny country church. And I passed it on my way to another Presbyterian church. So I thought, oh, you know, I'll swing in and say hello. So I walk in, and the pastor's there. And I said, I was like, hey, I'm Sarah. I'm from the pregnancy center. I have this bag of stuff for Sanctity of Human Life. Really sweet, friendly guy. He stands up and goes, I will say no on behalf of my congregation and ask you to leave. And I was like, fine. And I left and I went to the conservative church up the hill, and they support us now. Yes.
You should try again just for fun.
Honestly, I might. Sometimes you just need
challenge.
Yeah, sometimes you need a challenge. You need some conflict to get your blood going in the morning.
Yes.
You know, I'll be back. I have a retort. I know it's been 5 years. Yeah, he might not. Well, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But yeah, when the pastor changes, even a church that is non-supportive could change. And so that's something to be aware of as well. Another reason you might use to go into a church could be your walk for life. Bring in posters, bring in bulletin inserts. That's a little bit harder because you're actually trying to get them to raise money or encourage people to raise money for you. I think Sanctity of Human Life can be an easier one if you have no contact with the church because you're really not asking for anything. But a lot of churches are willing to advertise your walk for life. Same with your baby bottle drive. That can be a really fun thing for them to do that doesn't take anything out of the church budget. And I always start my church journey with churches that I know are going to say yes. Like, you want to get that encouragement, right? You don't want to pick the hardest church. You don't want the first church that you talk to tell you to get out. Go to a nice one.
Yeah.
Pick a pastor that likes you. It's going to give you a donut.
Okay.
You know? Get an easy win under your belt. And then you can go to the other ones maybe you don't know as well. The other thing, and I know, again, this is sort of traumatic for millennials, because I'm a millennial. Don't email, don't text, don't Snapchat. I do text pastors sometimes, but only if they are also millennials. Pick up the phone. If a church has ever donated to you, I mean, if they gave you $20 6 years ago, call them and tell them you want to give them an update. You have a reason, right? They've supported you.
When I ever give to the pastor, it's always the secretary that I give.
Can you schedule an appointment?
And I can never get past the gatekeeper.
You have like a gatekeeper.
He's always busy.
Oh, that's frustrating.
I've gone around him and found him on Facebook before.
I've done that.
Sent him a message on Facebook.
Mm-hmm. If you know the pastor's name.
If I can't get through the secretary.
Or if you know someone that goes to the church, you can ask them to set up a meeting with you and the pastor. I've done that before. Again, you have to be a little bit comfortable with stalking.
In that case, is it appropriate to maybe ask about who the missions chairman is?
Absolutely, yeah. Oh,
and
I understand.
That direction.
Your pastor's really busy. He doesn't have time to meet with me. Who would be a good person for me to meet with?
Or figure out his wife.
Yep.
Because, like you said, pastors change more than sometimes the missions chairman or something like that.
Yeah, and if you can find someone in the church that's dedicated to missions, even if they don't have a title, they might be willing to bring the information that you give them to the church. Also, for the recording, I am not endorsing stalking. Nobody take that out of context.
I've gotten good results from working through the liaison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you have church liaisons, they can help too. I have not had great luck, honestly. And people are always like, do you have a good liaison program? And I'm like, we don't even have one.
We have an excellent one.
Yeah, some programs are great and they work really well, and other people can't get them off the ground. And so if you can get them off the ground, do it. But if you're beating your head against the wall, just move on. And that's what I've had to do. We just haven't had good luck with that. But if the church is giving you money, you've got to stay connected. It's important. They deserve to know what the money is doing and how you're using it and how you're ministering and how you're really operating as an extension of their body of believers. All right, so how do we develop relationships with our churches? Relationships are great, but you have to stay organized. If you spend a lot of time shuffling papers, flipping through notebooks, moving post-it notes around, you're wasting your time. And none of us have time to waste. If you have a lot of churches, you cannot keep up with them in your head. You just can't. It's impossible. You're going to get them mixed up with somebody at some point, and it's not going to go well. You've got to have some system of keeping track of them. Not to mention, you want to delegate as much of this as possible. A system that's easy to understand will allow your team, whether they're paid or volunteer, to help you. So in addition to our WayCool database, we keep track of all of our churches in a spreadsheet. Now that seems like double work, but it's easier then for our volunteers to go through and call all the churches because they don't have to look up each one individually. And then they keep track in the spreadsheet if a number has changed, if an address has changed, a pastor's name has changed, and then we have someone else who's better with the database go through and plug that all into the database when they get a chance. But one of the gifts I want to send you today, if you signed up for it through your email, is a cheat sheet that I invented, so you can copy it, you're not going to go to jail, for keeping track of churches. So how many of you have heard, and I forget the name of who originally did it, but it was like the ABCD rating system? We used to use that. Volunteers hated it because they would come in to work with us and be like, why is my church a B? My church is an A. My church is an A plus church. I changed my church rating because you think we're a B. And we're an A. And so we had to change that. They literally would. And I was like, that's not how this works. Yes.
At one of our banquets, we listed all our churches. Mm-hmm. It was amazing when people would go, why are we on there?
Yeah.
I'm like, you tell me.
I went to a church and the pastor announced publicly that they support us. And I'm sitting there thinking, no, you don't. But I didn't want to say anything because I'm thinking I was wrong. I went back. They totally don't. Yeah, I had to call him and be like, so. he was like, we don't? And I was like, nope. Yeah, I think they do now. Kind of had to, yeah. All right, so these ratings are not a value judgment. They're just a way for you to keep track of your relationship with the church. So this is if you're a millennial, this is very millennial. The top one is BFF. They're your best friend forever. That's as high as a church can get. And for each church, that might look different. Okay, so I might have a church that's in a very conservative denomination that by their charter can't take us on for monthly support. But they send volunteer groups, they do baby bottles, they have, you know, and so maybe they're a BFF church. There might be another church that supports us monthly and they're not a BFF church because we don't have tons of friends there and we don't have a great connection there. So it's a very fluid system in that it's kind of up to you as the development director, executive director, to decide what's the best designation for this church. But the BFF is as high as you can get. The next one are your good friends. They support you, you know them, they know you, there's a level of familiarity there, but you don't have that like really close, tight connection that you have with your BFF churches. Your next ones are your acquaintances. Maybe they send you a check once a year. Maybe they do baby bottles every couple years. You don't know a whole lot about them. They don't know a whole lot about you, but they know that you exist. They know that you do good work. This I find to be the toughest church group. People can live in acquaintance land for years and years and years, and you never get them out of it. And so my advice is don't worry too much about them because they get kind of in that rut. They're very comfortable there. They don't really want to move out of that. And until something happens, they're probably not going to. New friends, those are the best. These are churches you just met, they just sent their very first gift, they just willingly took your Sanctity of Human Life or Walk for Life stuff. So if you drop it off on their door, don't be like, look at you, you're a new friend. You know, they're like using it to like light fires or something and you don't even know it. But like if they're brand new to you, they're a new friend. Mm-hmm. Prospect churches are churches in your community that you know they exist, but you don't have any real connection with them. Maybe you dropped off stuff for them, you don't know if they took it, you don't know if they liked it. You know that they're there, they're around, but you don't have any real like relationship there. And then your D's are your do not contacts. And there's a couple reasons for do not contacts. The first one could be that they're pro-choice. There's a Presbyterian denomination in my town called More Light Presbyterians. They are extremely liberal. I'm not going to contact them. More Light Presbyterian. Their focus over the summer was queering the family Bible study.
Lord.
So that'll tell you what you need to know. They're shockingly not pro-life. So they're not on my contact list. I'm not going to bother. It's really kind of pointless. I have to make sure I'm ending on time. Oh, I have 11:30. We have tons of time, guys. It's great. Okay. Another do not contact, because we want to be good neighbors with our friends, the pregnancy centers around us, might be a church that's already supporting another pregnancy center. Now, there's no reason a church can't support two pregnancy centers. But if you walk into a church with your bag and your offerings and you're like, I'm here, I'm from the pregnancy center in this town, and they say, oh, we already support, that's great. I am so glad to hear that. And walk out the door. There's no need to compete. Now, there are churches in my database that support other pregnancy centers, and they support us. But my goal is never to get them to stop supporting another pregnancy center and get their money to come to us, because that's not, we don't need to be doing that. That's not necessary. Now, there is space if you're out of your area or you run into a pastor in a different place and they're very close to one of the other pregnancy centers, send them to them.
Yeah.
Like, I was in a town before we had our Butler office, which we're there with the agreement of the pregnancy center, other pregnancy center, we're working together. I met with a pastor, had a great meeting, and sent him to the pregnancy center there. Like, we don't need to compete with each other. All right, so this I can email to you I'll email to you if you're on the list.
Is that the list there? The blue notebook?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, did anyone not get to write their name and email down in the blue notebook? With questionable drawings my son put in it?
I didn't.
Okay.
So will it have kind of the definition?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll define all of it, yeah. You're going to be like, what's a BFF?
Yeah.
This is so unhelpful, Sarah. What did you do?
You were talking about the church that said they supported and they didn't, and I was speaking at a church one morning, and the pastor said, we've invited Alice to come and tell us about the ministry because our church has committed to $1,000 a month. And I'm sitting there going, that's wonderful. And they had committed to $1,000 a year.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
a very
I don't know that was ever corrected to the, you know.
Probably not.
Because afterwards he was like, I said no, didn't I? And I'm like, Yeah, that's okay.
You're like, we're super excited.
So I think the congregation thinks they're bringing
it. Well, hopefully they look at their church budget. They know that's not really happening. So another way to build relationships in your churches is to be the expert on the pro-life issue. That's our job, right? Part of our job. As your personal name, now I don't mean just your pregnancy center. This is more going to be your personal name gets out in the community. People will call you. They'll call you with questions. They'll call you with thoughts. They'll call you with articles. They'll call you with personal problems. They'll call you with family problems. I've had pastor's wives sitting in my office crying because their daughter is pregnant. Mm-hmm. And they don't feel like they can trust anyone else. You want to be that person, partly because you want to minister to these people, but also because you want to be the person they come to when they have a question relating to the life issue. I've been asked about pro-life legislation. I've been asked about pro-life legislation in Arkansas. In the middle of a church service. And I'm sitting there like, what? I'm not sure I could consistently point to Arkansas on a map of the United States if it's not all written down. I've been asked about in vitro fertilization. I've been asked about how to talk to your teenager. Don't tell people you don't know. Don't make stuff up. You know, look it up. Don't just make things up wildly. That is a terrible idea. But if someone calls you and they ask you a question and you don't know the answer, say, you know what? I'd love to talk with you about that. I want to do some research. Can we grab some coffee next week? Or next month, depending on the topic. And then do the research, look it up, find the answer, or at least find something to discuss and come together with that person and work through that topic with them. One time I met with someone who wanted to talk about the chances of having a successful pregnancy while dealing with lupus. That's not something I know off the top of my head. But we scheduled a coffee meeting, I talked to my medical team, I printed some stuff off the internet, and we sat down and we had a great conversation. And so it's not about knowing everything, it's about knowing where to find the information and being willing to take that time to do that. Because as you do that, people will begin to say, you know what, you can trust her or him. You know, you can go to that person and you can talk to them. You can ask those questions and they're gonna give you really solid pro-life, pro-Bible advice. Even with all of these tips and tricks, the best way to connect with your churches is to present during the church service. So
So how many of you are comfortable speaking in public?
How many of you would rather shut your hand in a car door? So my, if you want to erase this recording later, I will understand. My board president tells me that people fear public speaking more than they fear death.
Yeah.
I guess because if you die, the only person you have to talk to is Jesus. I love public speaking, but I realize that's weird. And if you're looking at the population as a whole, most people do not. And that's okay. But you still can do it.
There are just some things you have to do to get ready.
The first thing is, do not wing it. I have seen so many ministry leaders get up and they're like, well, I'm really glad that you're here today. I just really want to tell you that, like, I just really love babies and ministry, and I didn't prepare for this. We've all seen it, right? And it's because we've created this myth in our heads that if you don't prepare, you are more authentic. Right? That's not true.
Just share from your heart.
Yes, share from your heart. Well, your heart is going to say like it 500 times.
That's a big thing.
The other thing that happens often is they repeat themselves over and over and over again. Or they go into incredible detail that frankly nobody wants to know. I once sat through an entire presentation of looking at pictures of the person inside of their clinic. I don't know how to tell you this, but nobody cares.
Yeah.
Even if you just did a renovation, nobody cares. If you want to talk about your renovation, that's great. You know, two sentences, photo of your waiting room, go to the next thing. There are tons and tons and tons and tons of books, webinars, videos, YouTube videos, articles, blog posts on public speaking. Read them, pick them up, follow the tips, plan ahead. Write down every word of your message and then rehearse it until you are so comfortable with it that it comes off very naturally, because you know it inside and out. And if something rattles you, like a baby crying — we all love babies, but trust me, they're distracting — a disturbance in the pew. One time I was in a church and the prison alarm for the prison next door went off. I'll be straight with you. I couldn't come back from that right away. So we're next door to the county jail. Yeah, this is nothing. We're next door to the county jail and this alarm goes off, like the alarm that goes off when a convict escapes. And the whole church is just sitting there. No one told me. So I'm like, should we leave? And they're like, no, that happens all the time. And I'm like, could we clarify what that means? And they're like, oh, no, they run tests on Sunday morning. And I was like, could you put that in the brochure? Like, welcome to our church. We're so glad you came to share with us. A prison alarm will go off 15 minutes into your message. Pastor still thinks that's hysterical.
You bonded.
We did bond. Then practice. Practice your message with your husband, with your staff, with your pet. Your children will not pay attention, so they're great. You might feel really silly, and it might feel really awkward, and you might feel like this is the last thing you want to do, but I promise you it will work. And once you know it inside and out, then you will be authentic, because you've rehearsed it, and you've practiced it, and you've internalized it, and you're able to present it in a way that makes sense and in a way that your audience can accept.
Can I share something?
I'm sorry?
Can I share one thing?
Absolutely.
Even if you forget something, no one's going to know.
It's true.
So I was beating myself up. I'm like, what if I forget to say something? You know, no one's going to know.
No one's sitting out there with like a rubric.
Right.
No. Yeah, she didn't even mention, you know, that they have blue walls in the waiting room. Psh, negative tip. They don't know. Exactly. They have no idea. Next, and everyone hates this, when you do speak in public, record yourself. I know. I don't like how my voice sounds. Nobody likes how their voice sounds. I sound like Kermit the Frog. You just have to get through it. A lot of churches are doing live streaming. Go back and watch the live stream. Do you do weird things with your hands? Do you use too many fillers? Do you touch your hair too much? Do you have a weird left. Those are things you need to be aware of so you can stop doing them. And then you can, work to eliminate those things from future presentations. I have been speaking publicly in a non-COVID environment multiple times a week for almost 10 years, and I still try to listen to every recording because there's always things that I can change. Like, I will probably make a lot less stalker jokes the next time I give this presentation. The other thing you need to do is you need to make them remember. They will remember stories. They will remember emotion. And they will remember their feelings. They don't want to hear a ton of detail. They don't want to get stuck in the weeds. And really, they don't want to know what you do. They want to know why you do it. And they want to know who you're helping and who you're doing it for. They want to know how they can pray. And so this is the one piece of your presentation that can go off script. I typically have a slide in the middle of my presentation and I just share a prayer request. Maybe it's a mom that hasn't chosen life yet. Maybe it's a mom whose apartment just burned down and she desperately needs items. Maybe it's a mom who's just fled domestic violence. It doesn't have to be this crazy elaborate thing that you share, and in fact it shouldn't be, because you don't want to violate your client's confidentiality. But in one line you can say, pray for a client that's really struggling in her relationship right now. Can you identify who I'm talking about?
No.
And you can share that with your churches and that's what they'll remember. And then they'll come back to you and say, what happened? How did it turn out? Did she get the help she needed? Did she choose life? And even if the outcome is negative, that does not hurt your ministry. So if I stand up and say, man, we have a client who's really considering abortion, please pray for her. And then 6 months later, the pastor calls me and says, you know, with that particular client, now you might need to jot it down. And I try to like even put like a client number or something, you know, non-identifiable on my notes so I know if they call me, I'm not like, wait, which one was that? She chose abortion. You know, please keep praying for her. That's okay. I mean, obviously we want everyone to choose life and sharing happy stories is really exciting, but churches get it. If you're in the trenches and you're in ministry, not everything is going to be positive. And they understand that. If your clients haven't given you permission to share a detailed story, that's all right. You can obscure the details. You can change a couple of minor things to make it so it's not identifiable, and you can use a stock photo. And it's not lying. Churches understand that. If I have a black client who had a baby girl after choosing life, I might change her name to Jessica, use a stock photo of a blonde girl, and say she had a baby boy. You know, that's going to obscure her identity. The idea isn't to give them this level of detail that they don't need. It's not to give them this crazy story with like every in and out and every crazy thing that happened in this woman's life over the 9 months. It can really be as simple as, she came to us, she was in trouble, she needed help, she chose life, we were there for her, and because we were there for her, you were there for her. So let me tell you how you helped her. And it can be as simple as that. The other thing you can do is change up your presentation. So any guesses on how often I change mine? Nobody wants to be wrong. Every time? Nope. Any other guesses?
Once a year.
Okay. Usually in November, December, I start working on the next year's presentation, and I develop a full presentation that goes for 20 to 30 minutes, a 10-minute presentation, and a 5-minute presentation. Because if a church gives you 5 minutes, you don't want to go for 6. Mm-hmm. You really don't want to go for 15, because they will never ask you back. If they say you have 5 minutes, shoot for 4, and then sit down. If you have a reputation for going over your time, for not being a good speaker, for not being engaging, they won't invite you back. If you have a reputation for being clear and concise, keeping people on mission, and sharing relevant information inside the appropriate time, you will get asked to tons of churches. Because that's what matters to them. If I speak in the same church twice a year, which is pretty unusual, I'll sometimes develop a backup message. But most of the time often that backup message will become my message for the following year. And then every time you practice that message, you get better, you get smoother, and you can put more energy and passion into it because you're not worried about what you're saying, because you already know what you're going to say. The other benefit to practice, and I will tell you this because I want you to know, everyone does things wrong. And so I was sharing a message about the woman at the well. And so I got a stock photo of kind of like a tough girl. And she's like standing in front of graffiti. And she's, you know, and I'm like, this is perfect. Because I want people to understand that this is not a flannel graph, right? Like this is a real woman who was a challenging person who was difficult perhaps to love. And so I'm at my own church. Thank you, Jesus. And I share that slide and I keep going through my presentation. My bookkeeper, also thank you, Jesus, goes to my church. And she comes up to me on Monday and she goes, did you see what's in the background of that slide? And I'm like, no. And she goes, in that graffiti, someone was flipping off the entire congregation. And I was about to take that very presentation into our most conservative church. Yes. Apparently a large amount of my church friends saw it and they didn't bother saying anything. They're all dead to me. But it helps if you're using the same slides, same pictures. You know they're all good. Study the background. Take it from me. And learn to laugh because you will make mistakes, but it'll be okay. You can change up some things as you go through the year. So maybe by June, July, August, you want to stop using last year's statistics and start using this year's. That's fine. Something new and exciting happens, throw it on a slide, insert it into your presentation. Maybe in the spring you talk about the Walk for Life, and in the fall you talk about the banquet. I mean, obviously there's some adjustments you want to make, but you can use the same core message each time, and the more you do it, the better you will get, and the easier it will be for you to stay on time, which is, of course is very important. All right, so here is another way to connect with churches. This is like my 30-second commercial. This is the book that I'm actually here to sell this week as a vendor. That's why I'm here from Pennsylvania. It's called Courageously Pro-Life, Equipping Believers to Transform Our World. So I wrote it because I was frustrated as a development director, as an executive director, that I didn't have something I could hand to churches and say, this will tell you what you need to do. This will fire your congregation up about the life issue. This will teach you everything you need to know. In fact, most Bible studies, Sunday school groups, whatever, if they mention abortion at all, it's one chapter. Nothing about history, nothing about euthanasia, nothing about eugenics, anything like that. So this study covers, every week is from a biblical perspective. It covers an overview of the sanctity of human life, ancient history of abortion, American history of abortion, euthanasia and eugenics. Everyone hates talking about that. And then it covers 2 weeks on apologetics, so how to defend the pro-life issue in a God-honoring way, a week on tough issues like rape, incest, and the mother's life, and then how to teach the next generation, and then 2 weeks on how to make this happen as a community and how to make it happen as an individual. And so the goal is to educate churches, to fire them up, and to get them more involved with your ministry. And so if you need an excuse, if you need a reason, if you need material, if you need message material, pick one up and plagiarize the heck out of it. I don't care. Oh man, see, that's on the recording too. This is a disaster. See, I have the biblical basis of the sanctity of human life came from one of my messages. The how to teach kids and teens came from a message that I spoke to churches. So if you even just, you're like, man, I want to have a really compelling biblical message, and you can't find one, you could pick it up and see if there's something in there that you can use, and that's totally fine. It can help you because it can help the people that go through this study, and I've seen it again and again and again in our churches. They become more engaged, they become more committed, and they become more fired up. In fact, the churches that I tested it in, I picked churches that were our BFFs, right? Because I'm like, if this is terrible, you can't hate me. You know, like I don't want to bring them something that's not a very good book and have them, you know, be like, well, we don't want anything to do with that organization anymore. I thought that church couldn't get better. They supported us monthly. Two of our former executive directors attend there. Tons of volunteers attend there. They stepped it up. They got better. And it was because they went through this and they got fired up and they got excited. It also helps you build relationships with churches. It gives you a reason to show up. Hey, I was at this conference. This really crazy lady that kept talking about things that might be illegal on a recording showed me this book. Can I show it to you? Maybe skip that middle part.
Yeah.
And see if they're willing to sit down with you. So I have copies at my table if you want to look at it, if you want to flip through it. I have some brochures up here. They're the blue ones. They say Courageously Pro-Life on the top. There's a 15% off conference code that you can use. It's good through the end of the year because I hate high pressure decisions. Like, I hate it when they're like, this week only. I can't make a decision in a week. I'm going to go back to the office and get hit in the face with all the stuff I haven't done all week. There's no way I can make a decision about buying something. So you have till the end of the year, and you can decide if it's something that works for you. If you do like it, you can sign up on my website for something called a PHO code. And that's for adoption agencies, maternity homes, pregnancy centers. And when you sign up for that code, anybody who makes a purchase from my website using that code, that 10% of that purchase comes back to you as a donation. I thought about giving churches a discount, but I'd really rather just give you guys money. And so then, not only do you get a donation, you also know then that a church is going to start doing that study, and you're able to start connecting with them as they go through it.
What is the conference code?
Alliance. And if you forget it, you can email me. Also, if you sign up for the PHO code and you don't like the PHO code I give you, you can just email me. I had someone email me and I was like, oh, I don't really like the code your system picked. And I'm like, I don't know how to tell you this, but I'm the system. I'm like, I look at your center name and I'm like, let's try this. So if you're like, wow, Sarah, that's awful, just email me and I'll fix it. It's not a big deal. I'm like, I don't know how fancy you think I am, but it's literally, and if you ever like sign up for a code and it takes like 2 weeks to get it to you, that's also because that's me. Sometimes they build up a little bit in my email before I have a chance to send them out. But once I do get it to you, we put it on our website, and so then any churches that you direct to the site, they can look up all the participating pregnancy centers, and they can find you listed, and they can put your code in that way. So if you didn't give it to them, or they lost it or whatever, they can still assign that to you. So these are just some free resources for design. I know that designing stuff can be really stressful. It can also get really expensive really fast. So Canva.com, you can sign up for a free nonprofit account. We use this for everything in our office. You can make social media graphics. You can make bulletin inserts. You can make posters. It's really, really user-friendly. And even those of us that are design challenged like me have had some success with it. And then Pexels.com and Unsplash.com are both sites with free stock photos. So you can find pretty much any photo you can think of. You can use it for free. You can use it in any way you want. The only restriction is they say you can't use it in a way that would be embarrassing for the model. So we tend to not use faces on any of our STD stuff, just in case, you know, that could come back. But there's plenty of, like, you can use someone's shoes, you can use a heart, you can use, like, the back of someone's head, and that kind of stuff you're allowed to use. They just don't want anything that would be considered embarrassing to use someone's face, which, I mean, I think makes total sense. All right, one more slide, and then we can have questions. All right, so this is just if you want to stay in touch with me, I will email you the stuff, and you'll have my email that way, but my email's at the top. I'm on Facebook as Sarah M. Bowen. I do have an Instagram. I don't actually maintain it, though, so if you want to get me personally, the best way is email or Facebook. One of my staff does Instagram. I just find it confusing. I don't know. I feel like I'm not presenting myself as very intelligent. I can't do math, and I can't use Instagram. Everybody has limitations. You can also check out my shop at sarahmbowen.com/shop, and then courageouslyprolife.com takes you directly to the curriculum. Now, one more thing, and then we have about 10 minutes for questions. AtHomeAbortionFacts.com is another website that my organization runs. And I know that Sam Lee, which I thought it was Stanley for a second, and I was like, whoa. Pretty sure he's dead, but if he comes, that's going to be really cool. So he mentioned the at-home abortion issue, and he was saying, like, you know, we need to think about this as pregnancy centers. We need to deal with this. And especially in a state like Missouri, where abortion is greatly restricted, women are more likely to look for that at-home abortion method. And so we have a website that we've put together, athomeabortionfacts.com, and it talks about the risks. It encourages women to contact Option Line or Pregnancy Decision Helpline. We also have some anti-trafficking and suicide help information on there. And so the whole goal is to get women to find that site instead of finding a site that will sell them the pills and encourage them to rethink their decisions. So you can use the website to educate your team about at-home abortion so they know what they're dealing with before it walks through the doors. You can also link to us from your client site. And I would really encourage you to create a page on your client site, even if it's hidden, because you don't necessarily want people clicking around and being like, oh, an at-home abortion. Sounds like a great idea. But if it's hidden, it'll still come up in a Google search. And so then if someone in your town searches at home abortion, you know, St. Louis, Missouri, then you would come up and not some, you know, some website offering to sell them the pills. And I have some information up here for that as well. So, questions. What questions can I answer for you? If everyone's real quiet, y'all get to leave. Yes?
When you take out your bulletin inserts and things like that, how many do you put in there, or do you just put one in there that they can copy?
We put in as many as they will need for their church. We guess wildly.
Okay.
Yeah. So if we try to call ahead, I have a volunteer. She's the best. She made 20,000 phone calls for the Trump campaign. 20,000. And she sounds like, when she's calling people on the phone, when she gets to her 100th phone call, she sounds like she's talking to the first person. Like, she's, I've never had anyone be as, I mean, we have lots of people who are good on the phone. She's incredible. She tries to call around to all the churches ahead of time. A lot of times we're leaving voicemails, so we're not necessarily getting that information. But if she does get someone, she'll ask them how many they need. Otherwise, we just kind of guess. And then if there's not enough, they can always make copies. Any other questions?
Too many.
Yeah.
Can you go over again what's in your bag that you take to the churches?
Sure. Okay, so we put in the bulletin inserts, however many they might need. I'll do a cover letter, usually explaining the event, whether it's Sanctity of Human Life or the Walk for Life, talk a little bit about our ministry, include an invitation for me to come and speak or do a table, you know, whatever you think needs to go in there, and then sign it. My business card and a brochure. Sometimes I'll also include, like, if there's a bunch of stuff in there, like one year we did an advertisement for the curriculum, we'll probably do that again this year. Then I'll include like a little short handy guide for like what's inside this bag. Because let's be real, most pastors aren't going to read the cover letter. Especially if you give it to a youth pastor. They're not reading the cover letter.
How do you manage the, of course, the speaking engagements and that type of thing with your commitment to your local church? I mean,
yeah, if my pastor was here right now, he would tell you very poorly.
if you have obligations in your local church, I have struggled with that for 20 years.
Mm-hmm. And I'm right there with you. I do not volunteer for anything Sunday morning. Now, the one exception to that now is I'm on our junior church rotation. But the junior church organizer knows that I have to have the schedule a year in advance. And so I'll block out all the Sundays that I'm in junior church. And then I won't schedule a donor church that morning. I've had people say you should take a month off, and make sure you're in your church. You should only be in churches every 2 weeks. I mean, you kind of got to find out what works for you. I'll be honest with you, I'm usually not in my own church from January to May. We got a new pastor 1 year, and he comes in, and I met him, and I said, well, you probably won't see me till May because I speak a lot for my ministry. And he was like, haha, that's funny. And then June comes along, and he's like, I really didn't see you. And I'm like, I told you. Now, I do make Wednesday nights a priority. So I go every Wednesday night Bible study. If your church has multiple services, sometimes you can pick up your early service, or you can go on a Sunday night. If maybe you do really love your local church, but you don't get to go enough, you could find another church in your community that has a Saturday night service. So that
speaking
at least you get
jerk.
To.
These are.
Should put him on speaker. We could talk to him.
You know, we're very small church. So sorry.
Yeah, you're very. You want to be engaged. Now, the way to do that, it would be to train someone else up in your ministry that can help carry
right.
the load.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. And I will be the first to tell you I am terrible at all of that. So I can tell you it's good. But I'm not great at it. I'm just not. I love speaking in other churches, and I have done it to the extent where I feel like, man, I don't even know the people that go to my... Okay, so this is another funny story.
Should we turn it off?
He's like, we're throwing the whole recording out. Don't worry about it. So we interviewed for a staff member, and we had an applicant who used to work for a pregnancy center like an hour to the south of us. It was perfect. We love that pregnancy center. We have very similar models. And the woman had moved from living where they live to living up where we live, and she didn't want to drive an hour for work. And so she was applying to work with us, and we were like over the moon about it. So I'm interviewing her, and I said something about where she was living or where she had moved to. Like, we're just chatting, and she goes, "Oh, I'm right next door to this one gentleman, Bruce." And I'm like, "I know Bruce. I go to church with him." And she goes, "I go to church with him. I've never seen you there." And I'm like, do you know the guy that comes by himself with four boys? And she's like, oh, yeah. I was like, that's my family. And she had probably been attending for 4 months.
Wow.
Yeah, so don't be like me. Any other questions? All right, well, if you would like to book, if you would like to look at the books, they're up here. I have some other handouts up here. I would love to sell you a book if that's something you'd be interested in, and I'd love to answer any other questions you have. So thank you guys so much. You were great. And again, apologies if the recording is garbage.
Do you have books in here?
I have two up here that you can flip through, but the rest are at my table. And if I'm talking to people and you want a book, my husband's out there, so he can. But the first person needs to take my phone because it has a square on it. Which I just realized.